she set coordinates for a massive Mon Calamari star cruiser. If she could take out its bridge deflectors, she could even the score. And I could fly into it just like that Rebel starfighter did, but on purpose, to end this battle. Maybe I could even end the war. That thought was tempting. Yet even as Sayana input her coordinates, the order came over comms.
All vessels regroup at pre-battle coordinates. Regroup immediately.
What the hell? She couldn't understand why anyone would give such an order. The pre-battle coordinates stood too far away from the rebels and the Death Star to be effective. Her fingers flew over the sensors, widening her view so she could get an idea of what was going on. And what she saw was the rebel fleet pulling away from the Death Star. Either they were retreating or... Sayana didn't finish that thought. Nothing mattered now but following orders. She had to empty herself out. Refuse to think. Only react. As she swooped away from the Annihilator, she saw a couple of TIE fighters moving more slowly than the rest. They'd taken damage but could still fly. In training, TIE pilots were told that aiding fellow flyers was their lowest priority, a task only to be undertaken if nothing else needed to be done. Sayana decided to ignore the training. She took position behind them, covering them from any rebel fire as they headed toward the Imperial fleet and safety. But as the moments went on, they fell farther behind. By now, she'd realized that the rebels were retreating in another direction. Facing off had become less important than staying alive. Come on, she whispered to the limping TIEs ahead of her. They needed to go so much faster. Thane's engine whined with strain as he pushed it to the limit. He and the rest of Corona Squadron had flown into the cloud of vessels, following the Millennium Falcon away from the Death Star at top speed. If only they could get on the far side of Endor to shield themselves from that thing. Over comms, he heard the Contessa call out,
"Brace for impact!"
"Here it comes!" Despite the most irresistible urge to look back, Thane refused to turn his head. If that thing blew, the light would be blinding. He'd be damned if the last thing he ever saw was the Death Star. Instead, he gripped his controls and stared at the ships in front of him. The curved rear light of the Millennium Falcon arced just above the placid green surface of Endor's moon. Did they save us? Have we saved them?
We made it!
Kendi called jubilantly.
We're out of the danger zone!
Made it? Thane had given his life up for lost. He couldn't wrap his mind around the words. We made it? Then space itself lit up as if it were a sky. For the first instant, Thane could only think it was beautiful. But the shockwave was coming. The shock of the Death Star's explosion felt like crashing into solid stone. Sayana's TIE fighter spun out of control, all stabilizers gone. Desperately, she tried to aim for the nearest ship's docking bay. If she could land in one piece, she stood a chance. The Death Star was gone. Had the Empire itself fallen with it? But there was no time to guess, even to think. Her sensors and the world beyond were both incomprehensible blurs. Nausea swept through her as she tumbled over and over toward the rectangle of light that represented her only safety. The second impact was worse. Sayana knew her ship was skidding against solid metal, smashing into steel, and then the whole world vanished as pain cut her in two. From the surface of Endor's moon, the wreck of the Death Star glowed like a golden supernova in the night sky. All around Thane, drums and pipes played victory songs. People laughed, drank engine room jet juice, and embraced the friends they thought they'd never see again. In the distance, by one of the bonfires, he could see Kendi dancing with someone who might have been General Calrissian. Yendor and Brill were doing a little patchwork on JJH-2, who had come through with only a few scratches. Logara seemed to be out drinking an entire squadron. To judge by the hand gestures Meth Watt was making, he was telling Wedge Antilles about some tricky maneuver. Thane sat at the very edge of the gathering, his back to a tree, mostly in the dark. Many ships of the Imperial Starfleet had escaped the Battle of Endor, and many had not. The Executor, Lord Vader's own ship, had been destroyed. He knew now it was the Star Destroyer they'd seen crashing into the Death Star. Sienna might not have been aboard, he told himself, but she was a senior officer. She would have been needed. Sienna would never have run from a fight, so she'd probably been on the Executor at its fiery end. If so, then the golden light slowly fading in the night sky was the only gravestone Sienna would ever have. He was consoled only by knowing how Sienna would have reacted when she learned of the existence of a second Death Star. If anything ever had the power to break her loyalty and her steadfast oath, that would be it. When Thane imagined how she must have felt the moment she realized the Emperor planned to destroy yet more worlds, that the obliteration of Alderaan had not been to end a war but to make Imperial power absolute, she would have felt so deeply betrayed. The Empire was never worthy of you, he thought. Thane saw another spray of shooting stars, evidence of yet more battle debris burning as it entered the atmosphere. When they'd spotted shooting stars as children, Sienna had always said they should make a wish. He never had. He wasn't the type to believe in wishes. Tonight, though, he did. Thane didn't wish for Sienna to be alive. That was already determined, set, beyond anyone's reach or knowledge. Instead, he wished for the New Republic to be at least half as righteous as the rebels claimed it would be. If he had helped destroy the Empire's power so it could be replaced by something better, Thane could believe the whole war had been worthwhile, even if it had cost Sienna's life. Sienna would have wished for that too. Somehow, that was the saddest part. Sienna remembered virtually nothing of her removal from the wreckage of the TIE fighter, only vague impressions of the screech of torn metal and the horrible wash of light as they pulled off her helmet. All she knew was the pain cleaving her in half. At one point, as droids pushed her hover stretcher toward the medical bay, Sienna strained to see her abdomen. One droid said in a flat, electronic voice,
"It is inadvisable to visually inspect your wound at this time. Psychological indications are that a patient would find it distressing."
Sienna looked down. A plate of metal jutted from her abdomen. It had shredded her flight suit and sunk in just under her ribcage, deep. The image was so gruesome as to be surreal. Dully, she thought no one could be injured like that and survive. The surgical droids were working at full capacity, handling the injured in order of rank. Lower ranks had to wait. As Sienna lay there, panting through the delay for the painkiller injection to take effect, a figure appeared by her side, still half-garbed in TIE pilot armor.
"Sienna," Nash breathed. He took her hand. She was grateful for the gloves they wore, because it meant he couldn't actually touch her.
"Hold on. You'll be in soon.
Admirals, captains and generals, they go first."
Her voice cracked on the words.
"Of course, but relatively few of them get seriously injured. You're one of the most gravely injured commanders, so you'll enter the operating bay any moment now."
A rush of dizziness swept through Sienna. Either the painkiller was taking effect, or her blood loss had taken her to the brink of death. She forced herself to look into Nash's eyes.
"I need... my father... You'll tell my father."
Nash shook his head as he cradled her hand against his chest.
"No last words. Do you hear me? You're not going to give up."
But Sienna persisted. This was too important.
"Tell Papa. I love him, and I should have stood by the one who stood by us."
Her father would know to find Thane and tell him too. At least Thane would understand that she'd finally seen the truth of the Empire and that she'd been thinking of him at the end. Nash said something to her in response, but she couldn't hear it. Dizziness washed over her again, stealing sound and light. Maybe she would be reunited with Wynette soon.
"Sienna? Why did someone want to talk to her?"
She didn't want to talk. All she wanted to do was sleep. Saina, can you open your eyes? Please try. She obeyed, blinking against the light. Her vision cleared as she saw Nash by her bedside. Now in off-shift coveralls with a small bandage on his forehead. Circled around the foot of her bed were three medical droids, all of which beeped and hummed as they took readings. Good. Nash smiled the way people did when they were trying not to cry. Oh, you're back with us. Why am I... Sayana tried to prop herself up enough to see her midsection, but the movement sent terrible pain rippling through her. Breathing through her teeth, she sank back onto her medical bed. Nash spoke in low, soothing tones, like a trainer calming a wounded animal. You came through surgery, though they said it was a near thing. But they had to remove your liver. It was damaged beyond repair. Most limbs or organs could be replaced by top-level robotics. The liver was one of the only exceptions. Its functions too delicate to be easily replicated. For now, they've hooked you to a life support belt, rather like Lord Vader's suit. Though, you need only to wear it around your midsection. You'll have to undergo intensive Bacta therapy. It can take months to regrow a liver. Better part of a year. But it can be done. He tried to smile for her. Leave it to you to find a way to take months of leave time without a reprimand. Sayana swallowed, though her mouth and throat were too dry. What's happening with the fleet? Nash's smile vanished in an instant. The Death Star was destroyed. Emperor Palpatine, Lord Vader, and Moff Gergerod all perished, as did Boriss. He stumbled over the name of their friend. The Rebellion is sending out mass communications claiming to be the new power in the galaxy. The Imperial Starfleet is regrouping to plan the next assault and name the next Emperor. Another Emperor? You can imagine the power grabs we're seeing. Civil unrest across the galaxy, even on Coruscant. But the strongest will prevail, and will have the leader we need for these difficult times. The most vicious and ruthless of the Moffs or Admirals will take power. We won't have a better Emperor who might be able to right our course. Instead, we'll sink further into the mire. Don't cry, Nash said. You're tired. I shouldn't exhaust you by forcing you to talk. Go back to sleep. You need your rest. Sayana turned her head into the pillow instead of saying goodbye. She didn't realize she'd slipped back into unconsciousness until she awoke again. To judge by the low lighting and lack of human personnel around, it was the medical bay's version of night. The life support belt around her waist felt heavy and stiff, and the connector shunts jabbed into her flesh like needles in her belly. Probably they would continue to hurt as long as she had to wear the thing. Sayana lifted one hand, and a droid rolled promptly to her side with some water. After she'd sipped from the tube, she said, When my armor was removed, I had a small pouch. A leather bracelet inside, braided.
The items were destroyed,
the droid said. It was one of the models without eyes.
Non-regulation.
It's not against regulation to carry something in your pocket, she wanted to protest. But she remained silent. Only now did she realize her bracelet had been her lone, wordless defiance of the Empire, the only way in which she had refused to become entirely their creation. Now they had snatched that away from her. More than that, they had taken away Wynette's window on the universe. Sayana lived her life for her sister no longer. Wynette had fallen into darkness forever. Sayana had no faith in the Empire, no loyalty, no friends, and not one possession to tie her to her homeworld. The galaxy was again slipping into chaos and anarchy, and she would never see Thane again. All she could do was lie there, helpless, as machines spent torturous months making her ready to serve again in a military force she now wanted no part of. She closed her eyes and slipped into the strange space between imagination and dream. In her mind, she took her TIE fighter in again, but this time, she aimed for the deck. If she could slam into the deck hard enough, her ship would explode and she could stop worrying, stop hurting. She could just stop.
Chapter 26.
Medical leave demanded absolutely nothing of Imperial officers, primarily because officers who could not make quick recoveries were most often declared unfit for service. Rumors said the medical droids also treated those with severe injuries that involved long recovery times last, to better dedicate their resources to those who could serve the Empire again sooner. Now Sienna was in the almost unique position of spending several months on medical leave, with no responsibilities. She was assigned to the space station Wrath, mostly because it had room for a completely extraneous person. Nash had teased her about the golden opportunity to read Holo novels or watch old Spice World dramas, but Sienna didn't want that much free time. It would only force her to think. At least she got to undergo back to therapy. They submerged her in the gooey stuff for at least a couple of hours every day, sometimes longer. Sedatives were always administered first, the better to ward off the severe claustrophobia that sometimes led Bacta patients to panic and re-injure themselves. Sienna welcomed the moment the wretched life support belt was taken off her body. She liked it even more when the needle slid into her arm and the resulting darkness from the sedatives. Sometimes the stupor afterwards lasted for hours. During the brief periods when she was awake and cogent, however, she insisted on working. Bridge duty was beyond her. Piloting was impossible. So Sienna volunteered for one of the messiest, most complicated tasks facing the Imperial Starfleet in the wake of Endor, and one of the only jobs she didn't mind doing. Her mission was to confirm which Imperial officers were alive or dead, learn the definite locations of all survivors, and inform family members of the deaths. Supposedly, the death notices were her lowest priority. But Sienna spent far more time reaching out to those families than she ever did looking for a missing survivor who might have deserted. Through a little tricky record-keeping and an excess of caution, she was able to avoid tracking down even one of those. In the wake of the Emperor's demise, the galaxy endured even greater chaos than Sienna had believed possible. Coruscant remained in turmoil. Grand Vizier Mas Amida tried to keep the Empire together even as other forces threatened to tear it apart. Consolidating and confirming personnel information was hardly a top priority. So the Star Destroyers had only their own records to draw from, and even when that information was synthesized, the picture remained spotty at best. To further complicate the situation, neither Sienna nor any other Imperial officer could be certain exactly which person they served. Declarations of a new emperor were so frequent as to be meaningless. No one figure seemed able to consolidate power. Already the propaganda holo spoke of skirmishes or mutinies. The truth? Would-be emperors forced Imperial soldiers to fight one another, spilling their blood in the service not of law and order, but of one man's naked ambition. They seemed willing to tear the Empire to shreds rather than give up their own standing, Sienna thought with contempt. Already the Anoa'it sector had been cut off completely. What planets might fall next? As for the rebels, they'd established their authority on worlds of their own. The only reports that emerged sounded so sunny, Sienna believed they were propaganda too, simply coming from the other side. At least there are now entire systems safe for Thane, she sometimes thought. He's no longer a hunted man. Would he still be with the rebel armada? Sienna wasn't sure. It depended on whether he decided to trust this new republic as much as he'd trusted the rebellion, or whether he'd died in the Battle of Endor. The rebels might have won the day, but they'd taken terrible losses too. Sienna believed, illogically but unshakably, that she would have recognized Thane amid the melee. Didn't she know exactly how he flew? Wasn't that as unique to him as a fingerprint or a genetic code? Even if that were so, it meant only that she hadn't killed Thane herself. Any number of other TIE pilots could have killed him, or he could have been flying too close to one of the Star Cruisers when the Death Star's laser struck. Maybe he had been among the pilots who flew into the station and smashed against the metal framework inside. Don't think about that, she would tell herself as she sat at her portable data terminal, propped on a med chaise. Lying down helped her bear the pincer grip of the life support belt, doing the work of her still-healing liver. You have to believe he's alive somewhere. If you can't have faith in anything else, you can still believe in Thane. And yet, sometimes Sienna felt that he must be dead. The galaxy could only feel that empty, meaningless, if he were no longer in it. So she buried herself in her work, patiently untangling every bureaucratic knot, locating and rescuing marooned ships and garrisons, and helping families mourn their dead. In that small way, she could uphold some measure of law and order amid the chaos. Nothing else seemed worth doing. Her only comforts were the sedation of the Bacta tank and sleep. Sienna could ignore everything else for days at a time, then weeks, then months. Thane hadn't expected the Empire to collapse overnight. Some of the cockeyed optimists around him had woken up the morning after the Death Star's destruction, talking about how they finally lived in a liberated galaxy, breathed free air, and other nonsense. He had patched up his X-Wing and awaited the inevitable call to the next battle. But he'd never expected to still be fighting a full-out war almost a year after the Battle of Endor.
Incoming!
Yendor shouted through the comms. Thane whipped his X-Wing around to see another phalanx of TIE fighters zooming toward them over the crest of the cliffs on Naboo. These must have been the very last stragglers of the attack force that had descended on the planet the day before. Luckily, the New Republic's fleet had received a tip from defectors. When the Imperial ships came out of hyperspace, Thane's squadron and several dozen other starfighters had been waiting. Since then, he'd been finishing them off, one by one, just like he was doing right now. He fired even as his ship sliced through the air sideways, and he took grim satisfaction in watching three of the TIEs explode. The others in Corona Squadron took care of the rest. The planet was clear now, or close to it. Kendi took a hit on her starboard wing, but still managed to land her starfighter smoothly alongside the others on the broad pavilion outside the Theed Royal Palace. Kendi burst out of her cockpit, swearing, which made the others laugh.
Come on, Thane called. You've taken worse than that.
Yeah, and I'm sick and tired of it.
She grabbed her toolkit and got to work. The rest of them had a moment to breathe. Corona Squadron was different now. The Contessa had left, returning to her home world to stand for the presidency. The others had all promised to show up for her inauguration if she won. Yendor had taken over as Corona leader, and two new pilots had joined them. One, a rookie from Nia Dejanum. The other, an exile from Coruscant. But Thane liked them both, and felt good about how the team had come together. He leaned against the side of his ship, relishing the warmth of the sun on his face. Moments of peace like this came too rarely. Naboo had been Palpatine's homeworld. As such, it had become a rallying point for Imperial sympathizers. Besides its symbolic importance, Naboo was a prosperous mid-rim world, its economy and environment far healthier than those of most planets that had been under Imperial rule. As such, it was one of the most contested spots in the entire galaxy. Three times now, the Empire had sent troops to invade. Three times, they'd been beaten back. Thane wondered how long it would take them to come back for number four.
Hey!
Yendor said as he helped JJH-2 from his ship.
Some of us are going into Oda Gunga tonight. If we don't get any more alerts, that is. Apparently there's this dessert they make there that takes at least four hominids to eat. They say it melts in your mouth and delivers you straight into a glorious sugar coma. You know you want a piece.
No thanks,
Thane answered, but with a smile. His friends tried hard to look after him. But some things you had to go through on your own.
You guys have fun. I'll take night watch at the hangar.
Yendor shook his head, his long blue leku swaying with the movement, but wandered off without further argument. Jellukan had very specific morning rituals. At least the Valley Kindred did. Thane had learned about them from Sienna, and wasn't sure he remembered all the details correctly, but he was doing his best. Jellukan remained under Imperial control, so Thane couldn't ask Perrin Ree for advice or even give his condolences. Thane wanted to weave and wear a bracelet so Sienna could see through his eyes, but she'd told him that honor was reserved for family. As dimly as he recalled the customary rituals for friends, they seemed elaborate enough and lasted for a full year after a person's death.
He wore a cloth tied around his upper arm and would not remove it until the entire year was up. At the 6-month mark, he'd prepared the customary meal of wine and bread to be left out at night for the spirits. He hoped it didn't have to be special bread or some particular wine. He'd done the best he could with what he had. As Thane understood it, he didn't have to refrain from all leisure activity, but the ritual required him to spend several hours a week in meditation. Okay, he wasn't exactly good at the meditation thing, but he tried. Big symbolic gestures usually weren't Thane's style, but after Endor, he had needed to ground himself in some way and had no idea where to begin. In his desperation, he had sought Syana in the rituals of her people. To his surprise, he found the experience healing. He mourned for everyone who had been lost. Smykes, Dak Ralter, the kindly Mon Calamari of the Liberty, countless other pilots he'd known, and for Jude Edovan and other cadets he'd known at the Academy who'd died on one of the Death Stars or in other battles. The Empire might have demanded that they sacrifice their souls, but at one point the majority of those people had been no worse than any others. All that was good in them had been lost to the Empire and to the war. Surely that was worth grieving for. His meditations had led him to another unexpected place, a viewpoint he'd never expected to have. The New Republic truly had been worth the fight. Sure, the transition had been uneven. With the war still going on, Mon Mothma, Princess Leia Organa, Sondeev Sela, and other top officials could not establish total stability. Yet the Provisional Galactic Senate contained only representatives chosen by the will of the people, and the first laws they'd passed had righted the worst wrongs of the Empire. Even the bickering on news hollows about the merits of each proposal was wonderful, because it meant people were free to express their opinions without fear of imperial reprisal. Resources weren't directed only toward the military. Mass cleanups of polluted worlds had already begun, as had reparations for the species enslaved during imperial rule. Logara said she was going to spend her share on new engines for the Mighty Oak Apocalypse. However imperfectly, the course of the galaxy had turned toward justice, and maybe someday peace. Thane had never tried being an idealist before, but he thought he was starting to get the hang of it. As he settled in for a long evening at the hangar, Kendi strolled over from her X-Wing. He said, "Got it fixed?" "Pretty much. I need a Loar clamp to finish up, but I can borrow one from Yendor tomorrow morning." She leaned against the wall, arms crossed in front of her. Her dark green hair flowed freely down her shoulders. "So, you're staying in tonight?" "As usual." "You're going to be here by yourself for hours." "Yeah, I am. I'm going to sit on this comfortable chair with a good hollow novel underneath one of the most beautiful skies I've ever seen, on a world where the air's still clean and the birds still sing. Nobody's going to fire a blaster at me, even once. After years of war, a peaceful night like that is my definition of a good time." "Happy 80th birthday, by the way." "Come on," Thane had to grin. "You have to admit I have a point." Kendi laughed. "I know. It's just weird, you going all mystical and spiritual and stuff." "I'm not." So many of the rituals had felt strange and false to him, yet Thane believed he had gotten something out of the mere attempt. "This is just a thing I have to do." "I get that. But will you answer one question for me?" Thane nodded, and she asked, "How long are you going to wear that?" She pointed toward the strip of slate-blue cloth still tied around his right upper arm. That was the Jellukani color of mourning, the shade of the sky in which they buried their dead. "Once I've worn it for 1 year," Thane said, "I'll take it off." "We're only a few weeks from the anniversary of the Battle of Endor. Is that when you'll finally be over Syna's death?" She hadn't understood anything. "No. It's the day I'll stop following mourning practices. But I'm not over Syana's death. I never will be." "That is more melodramatic than I expected from you, Thane Kyrell." He shrugged. "It's not melodrama. It's the truth." How could he get through to her? Slowly, Thane said, "What we were to each other? When I lost Syana, I lost a piece of myself. You don't get over that. You always feel the empty place where they used to be. Sienna winced, holding her hand to her midsection. The medical droids had finally cleared her for active duty, but the pain lingered. Maybe it always would. She straightened herself up and smoothed her jacket. When she'd put in her requisition order for new uniforms, she'd ordered them in the same size she'd always worn. Now, however, the clothes hung slightly big on her frame. She'd lost too much weight this past year. At least the cap fit. According to her duty roster, her first task was to meet with Grand Moff Rand on the main bridge of the Wrath. Sienna could only assume that he would brief her on her new duties, though most commanders didn't receive their orders from anyone who ranked as high as Grand Moff. Then again, those days, all the old protocols had broken down. She could take nothing for granted. Sienna walked to the bridge, waited until 2 minutes before her scheduled arrival, and then entered. Top officers liked it when you were early, but not too early. The Wrath's bridge differed from that of a Star Destroyer. Instead of data pits, more junior officers were located on long banks of stations that lined the vast octagonal room. No windows revealed Ponema, the world that they orbited. After almost a year on the station, Sienna still knew nothing of that planet, not even what it looked like from space. The only view came from the enormous transparent dome overhead, which showed the endless field of stars. Yet a few elements remained familiar, such as the dull reddish glow of the lights at floor level, the mesh metal floors, and the sense of tension, even fear. She could take no comfort in any of that. Grand Moff Rand stood at the far end of the bridge, his rank obvious from his rigid, imposing posture alone. He was pointing out battle plans to a few other officers. The images displayed on two-dimensional screens that covered one of the shorter walls. Sienna expected to remain at attention behind him until such time as he was free to notice her. But as she came close, someone called out, "Commander Sienna Ree on the bridge, sir!" Rand turned, as did virtually everyone else in the room. Sienna's eyes widened as she saw Nash standing nearby, smiling almost like his old self. Why would he be here? Why had all these people stopped and risen to their feet?
"Well, Commander Ree," Rand smiled, "you return to active duty at last."
"Yes, sir."
Sienna did not allow her expression to reveal any of the confusion she felt. Yet her heart pounded madly as she wondered if this were some sort of trap. Maybe they'd somehow guessed her lack of faith in the Empire and intended to make an example of her.
"Hear this," Rand said to all those assembled in the room. "At the Battle of Endor, Ree fought bravely and very nearly sacrificed her own life in our effort to save the late Emperor Palpatine. During her long recovery, no one could have blamed her had she taken the rest she deserved. Instead, Ree took on the most difficult and complicated tasks that would help restore order to the Imperial Starfleet. While others schemed for their own gain, she shared information equally, and without ever asking for special favors in return."
That wasn't anything heroic. That was the bare minimum required by duty. Had everyone else in the Imperial Starfleet completely abandoned their responsibilities to their fellow officers? Despite her disillusionment, Sienna couldn't help feeling contempt for those who had so callously shirked their responsibilities out of craven ambition or cowardice.
"In these times, few have proved themselves worthy of their rank. You have, Ree."
Rand walked to the viewscreen as he added,
"No doubt you expect me to inform you of your new assignment. Well, here she is."
On the viewscreen behind him, the battle schematics vanished and were replaced by the image of a Star Destroyer. An on-screen legend identified it as the Inflictor. Rand said,
"Herewith I present your first command, Captain Ree."
Applause broke out through the bridge, and Nash even cheered. She covered her mouth, too astonished to know how to react. Sienna's first thought was the truest. The Imperial Starfleet is in worse shape than I thought. Her service might have been exemplary,
But even so, under normal circumstances, an officer so young would never be considered for command of a Star Destroyer. Even if she'd been promoted to the rank of captain, she shouldn't have been given a ship like this. The power plays and attempted coups have thinned the ranks. Everyone else with seniority has either defected to one of the splinter fleets or been eliminated. Deep within her, the piece of Sienna's soul that remembered her old love for the Empire wanted to take pride in this. Captain before age 25. Commander of a Star Destroyer. These were honors she hadn't even dared to dream of back when she was an idealistic cadet. Now, however, the promotion was only one more burden to bear.
Sir, Sienna managed to say. Thank you, sir.
Grand Moff Rand seemed pleased with his little show. No doubt he saw it as a demonstration to his underlings that anything was possible if they were only loyal and worked hard. She had once believed that herself. What a fool she'd been. Numbly, she joined the procession down to the docking bay, where she would board her new command. Rand kept speaking the entire time.
Commander Brisney will be your ISB officer. Ship systems are under the care of Commander Erisher. And as for your flight commander, I believe you already know Commander Windrider.
She turned to see Nash walking at her side, slightly behind, still beaming. Only now did she notice the changed rank on his insignia plaque. No doubt hers awaited on the bridge of the Inflictor.
Congratulations, Sienna, he said. I've hardly heard from you since I shipped out on the Subjugator.
I'm sorry,
Don't be silly. I understand completely.
Between the ordeal of your recovery and all the work you've done, I'm surprised you even found time to sleep.
Nash showed no sign of jealousy or suspicion. Maybe he'd even gotten over his crush on her in the 10 months they hadn't seen each other. In some ways, his guileless trust was harder to bear.
I only meant I look forward to seeing you regularly again.
Every day, Sienna said, without expression. After another brief ceremony on the Inflictor's bridge, Sienna pinned her new insignia plaque to her uniform and went into the briefing room with Grand Moff Rand for a classified conference. As soon as they were seated, Rand's smile faded. Only the cool tactician remained.
We're headed toward a major standoff with the rebels, he said. We're committing a fair portion of the fleet. And if the damned rebellion wants to stand a chance of keeping that sector, they'll have to do the same. This promises to be the largest battle since Endor.
His long finger jabbed at the controls, and an image of a planet in brown, russet, and gold hovered above the holo projector.
Here we have the desert world of Jakku, worthless on its own, but soon to live forever in history as the place where the Empire defeated the rebellion once and for all.
Maybe it would. Maybe they'd be sent limping away in defeat. Sienna didn't know or care. She only understood that despite her disillusionment with the Empire, she had to fight. The alternative would be to surrender to the rebels, and she could imagine how they dealt with captured enemies. And if she deserted her post as captain of a Star Destroyer, the Force alone knew what would become of her family, especially her mother, still enduring her forced labor sentence in prison. Sienna had hardly had a chance to think of escape during her recovery, and now it was too late. There was no way out for her. Not anymore. Everything Sienna had worked for her whole life was a sham. Now she would continue this war only because she had no choice. Jakku, she thought, looking at the world and imagining the battle that lay ahead. Let it come.
Chapter 27
Thane didn't like the idea of going into battle without his X-Wing. However, General Ryken had insisted.
We need people like you and Lieutenant Ideally who have served on Imperial ships in the past,
Ryken said as Thane, Kendi, and other troops boarded a transport.
It's this simple. We need more vessels, and we need them faster than they can be built, especially while the Empire still holds most of the main construction facilities. The only way we're going to get those ships is by capturing them from the Empire. Thane managed to respond to this politely instead of with the scorn it deserved.
Sir, with all due respect, nobody has ever captured a Star Destroyer. And don't tell me it's because no one has ever tried. Yeah, way back in the day we managed to take out a governor's destroyer over Mustafar. But since then, the Imperials have shored up their defenses against infiltrators. These days, Star Destroyers are nearly invulnerable.
Those crews aren't as diehard as they used to be, Riken insisted. We've had ships as large as attack cruisers switch allegiance in other battles, haven't we?
Those have thousands of crew members, not tens of thousands.
We only need enough sympathizers to help us shut systems down.
Only former Imperial officers such as you and ideally can lead us to the most vulnerable areas.
Grudgingly, Thane took Riken's point. If they could get one of the auxiliary bridges, the engine room, and a couple of the gunneries under New Republic control, they could effectively paralyze a Star Destroyer. Actually, claiming the ship would require intense intervessel combat, lasting days, if not weeks, but it was possible.
A long shot, an extremely long shot, yet possible.
I feel so cooped up in here, Kendi grumbled as they took their places in the hold, harnessing themselves into slender seats that were more like those for a hover bike than a space journey.
We can't even see the battle.
Thane found it incredibly strange, too. Looking at the flat beige walls of the troop transport instead of the vastness of space, hearing not the hum of his engines or the screech of his guns, but only the murmur of other nervous soldiers.
Maybe that's for the best, he said, though he didn't believe it. We can focus on our plans for boarding.
Kendi leaned closer, glancing about her to make sure nobody overheard before she spoke.
Neither of us was ever posted to a Star Destroyer. I've only even been on one 3 times, and never for more than a day. We studied the schematics at the academy, he said as confidently as he could manage.
We both remember the most important information, especially about internal defenses. That's enough.
She sighed.
May the Force be with us.
Always the Force. Thane's year of meditation had not convinced him that there was any all-powerful force at work behind galactic affairs. Still, let Kendi take her courage where she could find it. Maybe he wouldn't have felt so uneasy if any element of the mission was familiar, but none of it was. Being without his X-Wing was by far the worst. He'd have felt safer shooting down TIE fighters than running into the heart of a Star Destroyer. Yet smaller details rankled too. Instead of his sturdy, full-cover helmet, he wore only a small one that fastened under his chin with an uncomfortable black strap. Instead of his orange flight suit, he wore a simple uniform of trousers, shirt, and vest that he associated more with days off than with battle. And around one arm was tied his grayish-blue mourning band. Technically, he should have taken it off 4 days ago, on the anniversary of the Battle of Endor. By then, however, Thane had known the Battle of Jakku was coming, and it had felt right to take it with him into the fray.
Once this battle is over, I'll take it off, he promised himself.
I'll burn it as the ritual commands, and I'll save the ashes until the day I return to Jellocan. In his mind's eye, he could already see himself entering the fortress for the very last time. He would put the ashes there, with the old toys and the cast-off boots, and the pallet of blankets and furs where he and Sienna had made love. Then, at last, he could begin again.
"Which destroyer is this?" Thane asked, wondering if it would be one he'd ever seen.
"The Inflictor," someone answered. He'd never heard of that one.
"At least they issued us blasters," Kendi muttered.
"I'm even better with my blaster than I am with laser cannons."
"Then I'll stick by you," he said, and was rewarded with her smile.
"All hands," came the voice over the intercom, unnaturally calm. "Brace for impact."
Thane grabbed the straps of his harness.
"Here we go."
Whatever else Sienna Ree was, she was not a traitor. During the few short weeks she had served as captain of the Inflictor, she had done her duty to the very best of her ability. If she felt no loyalty to the Empire any longer, she understood her responsibility for the hundreds of thousands of lives under her command.
so she had not given anything less than her best during the Battle of Jakku. If other Imperial officers could have said the same, maybe they wouldn't be on the verge of annihilation.
Status report!
Sienna called out as she walked closer to the data pits.
Engine 3 is only 66% capacity, Captain!
The young ensign's face looked up at hers, his ruddy skin flushed with panic.
Engines 1 and 5 are still completely down. We only have full power on engines 3 and 7. 2, 4, and 6 are each under 30% power.
Damn! If her repair crews could get Engine 2 back up above 85%, they would still be able to jump into hyperspace and escape the battle. If they couldn't fix it, or if Engine 3 took damage too, the Inflictor was trapped. No option but retreat offered any chance of survival. The main view screen displayed a disastrous panorama. Against the brownish-gold surface of Jakku were silhouetted hundreds of ships, both Imperial and Rebel, from frigates and other Star Destroyers down to countless starfighters. Meanwhile, smaller screens on either side showed scenes of ground battle, which was proving to be even more of a rout. Even as she watched, a walker took one hit too many, wobbled on its slender legs, then fell sideways so hard that sand exploded from the impact like a tidal wave. Everywhere Sienna looked, the rebels were attacking while the Empire tried in vain to defend itself. The advantage had been theirs from the beginning, to a point that made her wonder bitterly if the whole battle had been a trap. Maybe their plans for making a stand at Jakku had been betrayed by some admiral or Grand Moff whose power play had been thwarted. "We need a change in strategy," she said mostly to herself. Imperial battle tactics nearly always called for concerted, simultaneous effort by all ships engaged in combat, rigidly controlled by a central command. When the Empire had possessed the advantage in strength and numbers, those tactics had made sense. Now Sienna thought they were clinging to the rules of a game that had ended more than a year ago. The rebels had proved that smaller strike forces could be effective, even deadly. They often attacked on multiple fronts at once, segmenting their forces. That approach was riskier, but there above Jakku, it was getting results. The Inflictor shuddered. Although the sensation was no more than a faint vibration beneath her chair, Sienna knew the damage was significant even before control screens lit up red.
"Explosive decompression aft starboard!" cried an ensign. "Losing atmosphere! Seal off all affected decks!"
With those words, Sienna knew she had saved her ship, but condemned hundreds, if not thousands, to death by suffocation. "We can't keep fighting by the old rules. It's futile!" Sienna went to a view screen and pulled up a three-dimensional view of the battle, in miniature. If she could convince Grand Moff Rand to split up the fleet, to attack the Rebel Star Cruisers from multiple directions, maybe even to send one of the 20-gun raiders into the atmosphere to support the TIE fighters battling near the planet's surface, at the very least, they'd shake the Rebels up. They desperately needed any advantage they could claim. Would Rand ever listen to her? She might be captain of a Star Destroyer, but he was a Grand Moff, and he'd subtly made it clear that she owed her rise in rank entirely to him. Once again, it struck her how absurd it was, how foolish, how wasteful, how stupid, that rank mattered more than ideas in the Imperial fleet. It angered her. It disgusted her. She hated the Empire she served, hated the values it stood for, hated the way everyone talked about Palpatine as though he were some virtuous martyr. She hated herself for having ever believed in it. Mostly, she hated that it was all she had left. But then she saw the other officers scrambling around her, trying so hard to fulfill their duty and to survive. Sienna owed it to them, at least, to do her best. If she had no other task worth the doing, she could simply try to get them home. She began, "Open a channel to Grand Moff Ren." The entire ship trembled, hard enough to knock officers' caps from their heads and spill at least two analysts onto the floor. Sienna braced herself against the wall.
"What was that?"
"Captain, we show another hull breach, portside, on decks double R through double Z." The young officer's face betrayed her confusion. She looked up at Sienna, her skin tinted red by the light.
"But sensors reveal no sign of vacuum."
Then the Inflictor shook with another impact. Another. A fourth.
each resulted in the same bizarre readings, gaps in the ship that had not resulted in vacuum. There could be only one explanation. Sienna's gut dropped. Although she had never been aboard a ship when this had happened, she had learned the signs in the academy and relived them sometimes in her nightmares. We've been boarded. Boarded. In the pitch of battle, that meant only one thing. Her ship had to die.
Get to the control center for Engine 3, Thane ordered through his comm link as he edged down a corridor already thick with smoke. If we can take out their last fully functioning main engine, we have a chance.
Thane's job was simpler and far more critical. He had to disconnect the self-destruct systems as soon as possible. Not one Imperial officer would hesitate before ordering the mass suicide necessary to keep a Star Destroyer out of New Republic hands. Ahead of him, along a perpendicular corridor, he saw blaster fire. The echoes of each shot ricocheted off his eardrums with painful intensity. Through the tinny ringing in his head, Thane could hear other reports coming in. Contrary to Riken's prediction, the crew of the Inflictor was putting up stiff resistance. The Imperial troops aboard this ship seemed to be more dedicated than most of the others. Just Thane's luck. The blaster fire ahead cleared, and then Kendi's head appeared around the corner.
Cleared the way for you guys! Come on, let's go!
Thane ran at the head of the platoon, hoping they could advance as far as the portside auxiliary bridge. If they could gain control of that, they'd be in a much better position to help the other New Republic soldiers throughout the ship. But even as they charged into the next section, another wave of stormtroopers met them, blasters blazing. Thane flattened himself against the wall. The air smelled like ozone and smoke, and he saw no way out.
What do I do?
They couldn't get to the self-destruct systems, not like this. Which meant that within minutes, the Inflictor would explode and kill them all.
Get through this, he told himself. Go!
Captain Rhee, you can't! One of the junior ensigns protested. She couldn't have been more than 17. The Imperial fleet was stealing them from the remaining academies, even though they were still too young. I can and I must! Sienna took her seat as she mentally prepared herself for what she was going to do. More gently, she added, Don't be afraid, Ensign Perrin. We'll have time to get to the escape pods, and each of those is equipped with a homing device that will take it straight to the nearest Imperial vessel. Perrin smiled shakily. Around her, the other officers seemed to calm themselves too. Why did regulations discourage speaking with any sense of moderation or compassion when it sometimes did so much good? At least the Empire's ruthlessness would help her after the battle. Once this was over, assuming they weren't all in a New Republic prison camp, Sienna would be called on to justify setting the self-destruct on a Star Destroyer, one of the most powerful and valuable ships in the Imperial Starfleet. She knew the game well enough to understand that any explanation she gave would be found inadequate. Before Endor, it would have resulted in a long, grueling prison sentence on Kessel. Now she would either be cashiered out of the service or executed on the spot. Sienna found she didn't care which.
On my mark, Sienna said. Prepare for self-destruct. Initiating in 10, 9, 8.
The Inflictor shuddered again. Even loathing the Empire as she did, Sienna was too much a captain not to feel a pang at the wounds to her ship. She finished.
3, 2, 1, initiate!
Ensign Perrin shoved down the lever that would set the self-destruct in motion. Sienna waited for the red lights, the siren, the automated announcement sending all crew to escape pods, her signal to seal the doors, but they never came. After the silence had lasted a moment too long, she raised herself from her chair to pull up ship schematics. Damage lights flashed in all the wrong places, in particular one area not far from the portside auxiliary bridge. They targeted the self-destruct systems, Sienna said almost in disbelief. They specifically took them offline. Only a former Imperial officer would have known how to do that. In her head, she heard her father saying the words he'd told her once when she was only a child. All traitors are damned.
Awaiting your orders, Captain, said a lieutenant standing in the data pits.
She realized every person on the bridge and probably throughout the ship had no idea what to do next. But she did. The knowledge dawned inside her like the most beautiful day she'd ever seen. She could do her duty, fulfill her oath, and free herself from this madness forever. Sienna returned to her chair and hit the switch that would project her voice to all stations and to every starfighter based aboard the Inflictor.
All hands, abandon ship! All starfighters, rendezvous with the next nearest Imperial vessel. All hands, abandon ship! You have 10 minutes!
Around her, the rest of the officers stared. For the only time in her command, Sienna shouted at them,
"What are you waiting for? Get to the escape pods! Go!"
As all of them dashed out, the comms crackled and buzzed. Sienna knew who it would be even before she heard the voice. Only one person assigned to her ship would dare to question her now. Nash yelled,
"Have you gone mad?"
"Not sure what you mean, Commander Windrider."
"Don't you Commander Windrider me. Not now. If the self-destruct were online, we'd have heard the automated signal. That tells me you're planning on destroying the ship by... some other means."
Sienna sat back down in her black leather chair, as weary as if she hadn't slept in years.
"Just say it."
"You're going to crash the Inflictor into the planet."
She began punching the coordinates that would drive her straight into Jakku's surface. Already she could imagine the fire, the heat, the end. Then she would have done her duty to the last and yet escaped all the ties that bound her to the Empire forever. "I have to keep the Inflictor out of Rebel hands, no matter what." Sienna tried to imagine she was talking to the boy she'd known at the Academy. The boy who kept his hair long and braided back, in Alderaanian fashion, and whose impish sense of humor made them all laugh. "This is the only way, Nash."
"The hell it is! You can set the coordinates and get out of there."
"And leave the ship to the rebels? They take the bridge, change course, and fly off with their new Star Destroyer."
She leaned her head back and stared up at the metal-tiled ceiling so absurdly high overhead. Was the scale of the bridge meant to represent a kind of grandeur? Instead, it only made the space feel empty and cold.
"Sienna, please."
She could hear Nash's voice break even over the distant roar of his TIE's engines.
"At least tell me you'll try."
That was the last thing she wanted to do. Now that Sienna had found her way out, she felt only relief. The pain of merely existing day to day had become wholly clear to her only now that it had lifted, and she didn't have to bear it 1 hour more.
"I have to lock the doors now," she said. "Goodbye."
With that, she snapped off the comm connection to all TIE fighters. Never would she hear Nash's voice again. As she went through the procedure for the bridge door security locks, Sienna thought of the other things she'd never again experience. Being with her parents, flying a starfighter, or better yet, a V-171 she could take up above the clouds on Jellucan. Laughing at one of Boris's dirty jokes. Trying to wake up Jude in the morning and hearing her usually logical friend whine into her pillow. Riding her Munyak along the mountain ridges. Piloting a speeder bike through Rytkin hoops. Eating Mr. Nier's snow frosting cakes. Running on the Skyloop while Coruscant glittered beneath her. Being with Thane. Making love with him. Flying with him. "Goodbye," she repeated softly, saying farewell to it all. Thane froze in place the moment he heard the announcement, as the voice echoed through the corridors of the Inflictor, telling all hands to abandon ship. He tried to convince himself that it couldn't be her, but he could never mistake Sienna's voice.
"We just took out the self-destruct," Kendi shouted.
She didn't seem to have recognized the voice over the speakers.
"How are they going to blow this thing?"
He knew what Sienna would do, as surely as if he'd come up with the plan himself.
"She's going to crash it."
Quickly, he grabbed the comm link that connected him to Rykin.
"We need to get everyone the hell out of here now. If they can't reach our troop transports, they should go for the Imperial escape pods. Lights will mark the way."
Kendi, like everyone else on the blast charred auxiliary bridge, began running for the pods even before Rykin gave the orders Thane had suggested. Yet just as she cleared the final step down and got to the doors, she realized Thane wasn't following suit.
"What are you doing?"
Didn't you hear? We've got less than 10 minutes. I'll catch up, he lied. Go!